This week we're going to do Parshas Truma, which of course is our appeal guy. It's his favorite Parsha. That and Shkolim. Okay, but Daber Hashem, Moshe Limor, Daber El Bnei Yisrael, V'yekhuli Truma Me'ez, Kholish Asher Yidvenu Limot, Tichulas Truma Si, V'zodos HaTruma Asher Tichu Me'itam, Zav V'chesed V'nechoshes. This is interesting. The word Truma appears a few times. So what is truma? If I had to define truma, I would say it's a donation, right? I mean, but here they keep on saying that you will take the truma. When you're taking, what do you call that? That sounds like taxation, doesn't it? Or theft. Okay, me'ez kol ish asher yudvenu libo. Each person whose heart stirs him to give, that would be a better way to present it, right? And then it goes on to describe the different things which they're going to give, all the different specific kinds of donations which are needed to make the Mishkan function in the way that it needs to. So the Netziv has a few comments here, mostly noted we'll start with the fifth line. So he says that, the idea of it being an agava is something that people dedicate. They say, this is what I want it to be given. So the fact that people, that the gaboyim, the collectors, are taking it, is, he says, it's not such a terrible thing. It's already been designated. So he says, without the idea that people were designating the stuff, you can't say that the parsha is not given as a commandment except through nedavos. If people were not going to be making nedavos, then it wouldn't be given. That half of this, and I kind of skipped the beginning. Did skip the beginning, but boils down to a question which actually the Netziv doesn't really mention, and that's the question of when is the instruction for the Mishkan given? Is it instruction for the Mishkan given at this point in time chronologically in the text of the Chumash? It's just right here at the time that Moshe is given. Moshe goes up the mountain, which is what we saw at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, or is it given as Rashi says after the golden calf? In which it's a response, like, this is the way you use gold, this is the way you're supposed to use gold. Don't make a golden calf, make a golden Mishkan. But the question is, if people would not have donated, would there have been a Mishkan? Why is there like a forcing and a coercion, to build a base HaKnesses is a gathering place, Kitanya Vesefta. Mishkan is a positive commandment. Based in the Kafos al Kiyum Mitzvah Sasein. Based in are supposed to essentially force the fulfillment of a positive mitzvah. So skip now a few lines to where in the middle of the line there's a comment. It says, Umei Atosh Shapir Mitzvah Shev Lishmi. Okay? He says that everyone's supposed to, the Gabayim is supposed to take from each person what they're supposed to give. And now, Shapir Misyashik Lishmi says, now I have a better understanding. Shabikichas Hagiz Barim Lashem Kedushas Mishkan Miskadesh Bal Korchum Shabailim. That when something is taken specifically for the holiness and the sanctification rather of the Mishkan, then it's automatically Mikudash, and therefore it is designated, and it's something which, once it's taken in this way, it becomes that people want to give it. I would suggest that's where he's going with this, because people are saying, you know what? It's for the Mikdash, it's a good cause with Mishkan. That if there are people who say, hey, it's not just what you're going to take, I want to give. So he says, in that case, if somebody says, hey, I have a nedava, then to take the nedava, is that theft? Is that taxation? Nedava means somebody is donating, right? If somebody makes a pledge and then you come over to collect the pledge, are you taking from them a tax or a coercion? They made a pledge. So you're taking what they have designated, essentially. I'm sorry, okay? And that's not like the truma of the Adanim. What's the truma of the Adanim? The donation of the Adanim. The Adanim are the silver sockets that hold up the crushim, the beams which make up the walls of the Mishkan. So the silver for that came from the Machatzis HaShekel. That's what he says, Ashir lo yarbeh, where it's supposed to be that the wealthy is not doesn't give more, and of course the poor is not supposed to give less. That's referring to the half shekel. Now the half shekel, that was a tax, 100%. Okay, but everybody had to contribute, but contribute equally, to the point that, it's a total equalizer. And in that particular time, the half shekel was used for a very specific purpose. The exact amount of silver that was collected through the half shekel was the exact amount of silver that they needed for the adanim, for those sockets that held up the walls of the Mishkan. So that's a different kind of thing. But that taking could also be against their will. Somebody who makes a nedava and separates something, they have to force them to follow through with the pledge. Okay, skip to the middle of the line. Barisi, Betargim Yonatan, Parshas Tzav, Ches Tesvav. It's the parak, chapter and verse. Al Mikra Vayechtas Abizbeach Odilma Ishtakach Bnei Israel. Lahavi Belibe the Mesa Lavirita Veshama Kol Chruza Veistafi Veisigulot Tzavav. So he's talking about the Mizbeach and how the Mizbeach came out. And we're actually going to see a lot about the Mizbeach in a little bit. L'choru pel mazas astafi alo ha-churuz ha-ya me'ez kalish ha-she idren libo. Wasn't the call out that it's from everybody who's going to give? So what's this idea that there's a forcing and a coercion? El kamo she-kasu de-shama she-ikhu ba-korchon in lo yunidavos. People heard that people would come and actually take it from them by force if they would not give the nedavos. V'shemachi nadav tchila. So people said, hey, listen, you have a choice. You can make a pledge, but if you don't make a pledge, we're going to come and collect. So if you have a choice to make a pledge or people are going to come and collect, what would you much rather do? Make a pledge. Because if they're going to come and collect, who knows what they're going to take. But if I say, I gave it to the office, right? You know, so... You can try it. Okay? So once people saw that others were donating, that's the idea of the over usage of the word khu and tikhu and vizosa asher tikhu, that there was a culture of people giving. Now the next comment, I don't want to read inside, but he says that what was interesting is that the only people who could really donate were people who had the materials which are being described. In other words, we like to think, because this is the way we operate today, that when we ask for nedavas, when we ask for pledges, when we ask for donations, we're really asking for one thing. It's a very common denominator. Right? What are we asking for? Right? We're asking muzuman, right? Cash or check, whatever. Credit also good. Credit card also good. Okay? That's all fine. But he says that that's not what they needed. They didn't need money. What they needed were these materials. And so if people simply did not have these materials, then they were exempt from giving truma. And he goes so far as to say that the only real money collection, like official money collection, was the kesef, was the silver of the machatzis shekel. So much so that because they only needed that silver and it was the right amount, that they did not accept other kesef donations, meaning kesef meaning silver. Okay, zahav, obviously we know what they needed for zahav. There's a lot of gold in the Mishkan, and the final tally of how much gold was put into the Mishkan is given to us at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei. But that's important. So much so, take a look, starting in the fourth line, fourth word in the line, El Hashuma Yelefimashi Yesh Biyad Kol Chabinaminu Malalu. He says the estimation of what they need is based on people actually having these materials. Misha Einlo Minim Elu, Afagav Shuasha Reze Pater. If a person doesn't have these things, but the person happens to be wealthy, guess what? Exempt. Because it's not about writing a check. It's about, do you have the items that we specifically need? Right? I mean, in modern times, you might call that, for example, a barter. So, you know, you have a barter system. Maybe this is described, I'm more familiar with it from To Kill a Mockingbird. And you have some people who paid Atticus Finch for his services by dropping them off beans, rice, whatever it was that they grew in their farms, and they didn't have money, so you're able to do it that way. But in this case, it's not about money. It's literally about the items that are needed for the Mishkan. Okay, Zahav Chesef.
Where did they get certain of these materials?
Right. So the assumption is that they took them out of Egypt with them. Although I once saw a fascinating interpretation. I don't remember where I saw this, but that explained how what Moshe like Shem. It's on the pasuk in Mara. Shem sam lo chokum mishpat b'sham yisahu. That when Moshe, what did Moshe teach people? Chokum mishpat. Moshe taught them survival techniques in the wilderness. Now they didn't need. What I mean by survival techniques, not how to get food, they were given food. Not how to get water, they were given water. But how to... No. I mean, maybe that's there too, but what I'm referring to is how to deal with pragmatia. Okay, and what's pragmatia? It's business. In other words, that they're going to encounter people. You think the wilderness was empty? They never came across any people? They're always nomads. They're always caravans. I mean, think about when Yosef's brothers... See the Ishmaelim, people going down to Egypt. However, they're traveling. People go across. They're going to come in contact with people, and they're going to want to learn how to deal with business. You have to remember that these are slaves. What kind of commerce were slaves involved in? I don't know. You know, maybe they had their own ghetto and they sold things to each other. I don't know.
That's
right. I'm saying that's exactly the point. That's the entire. I don't remember where I saw it. It was a commentary on Chumash. Who said that that's what Moshe had to teach the people. So if they are engaging in trade with people, just, you know, non-B'nai Yisrael people, then it's certainly possible that they would have the items which we're talking about. Now, the point which I mentioned regarding the silver is discussed at the top of page 2 in that paragraph, Zav Chesed, which we're not going to read inside. Another donation which is talked about in the Pasuk is Shemen Lama Or, and I'm not going to read it inside, but he mentions how why is Shemen Lama Or specifically mentioned and not... Look at the next thing that it says. B'samim l'shemen ha-mishcha v'lektoras ha-samim. So you need b'samim. What are b'samim? Spices for the anointing oil. What, you don't need oil for the anointing oil? Right? It says that the shemen, the oil which they gathered, was for the lighting of the menorah. Shemen Lama Or. So what's the difference? The Netziv notes... regarding two particular substances, the shemen, the oil for the anointing, and the soles. Soles is a certain kind of fine flour that those two items needed to be manufactured in a very unique kind of way. And therefore, they were very rare. People might not have even had them. In other words, they needed the raw ingredients to be able to make the soles and the shemen for anointing. And that's why, and they're also very expensive. And he says that's why they're not listed here as items that people could donate. And maybe it needs to be made. I mean, we're familiar with the whole Hanukkah story with the oil for the menorah. That, I mean, that's Shemen HaMaor. But the idea that that needed to be done, that needed to be sealed with Tahara, right? In other words, so there's an element of that as well in the Shemen HaMishcha, and that's what the Netziv mentions over here.
How is it so certain? Originated from God, so maybe I can explain the question in that way, but some of these substances that they needed were obviously quite rare. They couldn't rely upon just meeting nomads who happened to have the item on hand. Did they, as slaves coming out of Egypt, have a wide variety of materials?
Right. So there's a lot that is said about that when they left Egypt, they took with them Bizas Mitzrayim, which is whatever they could take with them. Okay, and I have to remember that a lot of Egypt was destroyed, and like, here, take what you want, you know, get out of here, just get out of here, take what you want, get out of here. Avram was promised that they were going to be given Zahav HaChesev, and I don't remember when Simalos, like clothing is mentioned also, but that they were going to leave Berachush Gadol, with a lot of property, that's
understood,
a...
talking about valuables and perhaps raiment, but these were unique articles beyond gold and silver and ornaments and things like that.
Well, I mean, you're talking about different kinds of materials?
Yeah.
Okay, so some of these materials are all the same materials, just a question of how is it dyed. So how does the, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but they are on the one hand, on the one side near the Mediterranean Sea, and they are on the other side near the, what we call the Yam Suf today, which is the, you know, the Red Sea on both sides of the Sinai Peninsula. So, is it so crazy if in fact the Tcheles comes from the Murex trunculus snail that somebody could start looking for it? And I don't know the answer. Or it could be something that was in fact traded. I don't know. I mean, at least as far as the gold goes and the silver, you know, the precious metals and the precious stones. So between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Bizas Hayam, right,
yeah,
Moshe. Okay, so fair enough. The big question that most people actually focus on more than anything is the wood. Where'd they get the wood from? You know, and there are answers to that question, which I'm sure you've heard. Right. I'm saying there are answers to that question. But I have much less trouble with finding all this other stuff than the wood, because nobody's carrying around trees walking through the desert. That's just bizarre. So the idea that maybe I'm crazy. What do I know? Or maybe there's an oasis somewhere or whatever. I mean, again, there are answers. You know, I don't want to get lost in that. Okay, the next thing I wanted to show you is in Pasuk Zion. But I realize now that I didn't give it to you, so we'll leave that aside. But I'll show it to you in the pasuk. It says, "Avnei Shom ve'avnei Miluim b'lo eifod v'lachoshen." So Nitziv just points out how, in other cases, it mentions choshen and eifod, and why the changing of the order has to do with what the eifod represents in the donation versus the choshen being of a higher caliber and higher status in practice. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the famous pasuk of the parsha, which is the last pasuk on page 444, and that is Ve'asu li mikdash, v'shachanti b'socham. Okay, Ve'asu li mikdash. So, without getting into a lot of discussion, let's just jump straight into the Nitziv. Okay? Perish, so what does Ve'asu li mikdash, v'shachanti b'socham means? You'll make from your mikdash, and I will dwell amongst you. So the Nitziv doesn't go into the Hasidic, you know, interpretation that I'll live within you. You know, that's not the route in which he goes. Come on, Velazhin, let's keep it focused. Okay, Perish Rashi Shu Avtacha. Says Rashi says this is a promise. If you make a Mishkan, a Mikdash, then I will live among you. Mishmachi Perish the Mikra Asama Chol Asherani Mura Mechubar the Rosh Mikra Vasul the Mikdash Chol Asherani. Right, everything that I'm showing you, this is it's a promise. You do what I say, then this is what's going to happen. Look what Nitziv says. V'hu dochak. I love when commentaries do this, not because I don't like Rashi, but because they demonstrate that you're allowed to think differently, and you're allowed to suggest that a comment that you don't like or that doesn't work for you is a stretch. V'gam kasha, l'fi perusho, tavnis ha-mishkan v'tavnis kol kelov, ha'inu sh'rat suras ha-mishkan v'kelov. That the idea that Moshe has given over tavnis, what's a tavnis? The structure. That somehow he saw what this was supposed to be. Imkein l'maiksiv b'menorah mizbeach. What?
What did he say? Structure?
What the structure should be.
What it would look like.
Okay, what it would look like. So, l'maiksiv, imkein l'maiksiv b'menorah mizbeach b'yichud shirah. So, why does it say with regard? In other words, there's a phrase which appears in the Chumash a couple of times, "Kamareh Asher Esi Bahar," or "Asher Esich Bahar," that I showed you on the mountain. Okay, so he says, why is that mentioned specifically with those two items? Elamadati Perish Mikrazeh Miditanya B'Tosefta Menachos Perik Zayin Rabbi Yosi Omer Kol Zayin Yemei Miluim. Bayar Moshe Kol Melachavi Dinasu Osa Kasher Tzivu Hashem Es Moshe. That what happens is in the 7 days of the preparation, basically for that Yom HaShmini, that they did everything that Hashem had commanded Moshe. And the question is, Hechem Tzivo, when did He command him? And the answer is, V'asuli Mikdash, V'shachanti V'socham, V'upela Mashmein B'zeh Rabbi Yossi. This is an amazing thing that Rabbi Yossi is saying. The guy, L'may Yichet Zeh Mikra Yotem Mikol HaSeder. Why is this pasuk standing out? In other words, every single vessel for the Mishkan has an instruction. V'asu aron, v'asisa shulchan. So why does it say in general, V'asu li mikdash? Ella Rabbi Yossi, Einu Mefarish Mikras El Avtacha. Rabbi Yossi is saying, this is not a promise that if you make the Mishkan, I will dwell amongst you. Dimkein, Einu Kaseid Arroi, Kumash Kasati, Elohut Sivui. Shiasu Ba'ofen Shiahe, B'Shachanti B'Socham. It's a commandment. You have to make the Mikdash perfectly.
So that,
but it's not just so that, it's that it has to be this precise. In this exact kind of way. Okay, and the rest of this, he gives examples of how that is supposed to be. But one example that I think we can understand, if you are familiar with the Yerios, you know what the Yerios are? Those are the tapestries which become the covers of the Mishkan. The way that they were put together is they would make five long, let's say, tapestry. It's a kind of curtain, let's say. And then they would weave those together, so they became like a much larger square or rectangle, I don't know the exact dimensions. And they made two of those. And then there were 50 golden hooks and 50 treles clasps that were put together. And through those 50 hooks and loops, the two tapestries became one. That's a pasuk. Vayehi ha-mishkan echad, when they're put together. So he says, you know, sometimes, yeah, you ever go out, you don't have to answer. You ever go out, you buttoned your shirt, but you missed one button? It happens to me all the time. But thank God I wear a tie, so nobody can see. It happens more often when I stick my tie in my shirt, and then when I take it back out, I forget to button up the button again. Okay, so if I look, you know, so if you can't see it, so whatever. But if you see it, you look at a person, you go, a little off, but whatever, the person's wearing a shirt, it's okay. Let's say 49 of those clasps and hooks are put together, but not 50. One of them loosens and it falls apart. What's the Mishkan? It's no Mishkan. That's the point. He says this has to be done with such precision. It's a tzivui. It has to be done this way, not a different way. And don't mess it up. I'm giving you such precision so that it is done the way that God wants. Take a look at the last two lines, well, the middle of that second to last line. Vehechan siva mefarish mehay krav v'shachanti b'socham. He learns from v'shachanti b'socham that it has to be so precise. Why? Sheinase ba'ofan shetiyash chinasi b'socham. It has to be done in the way that I am describing to you, so that my shechina can dwell here. You don't do it that way. You mess up in the tiniest way. Then we know that it's not going to work. And this is a theme which the Netziv keeps coming back to in different ways, but noting that if the goal of the Mishkan is for the Shekhinah to be present, then the details have to be followed. Now, the next paragraph, I think I gave you part of it. I don't think I gave you the whole thing. Yeah, I gave you the first part until we're just going to read the last five lines of it, but I'll give you what the question is at the outset. So the pasuk says, "Kechol asher ani mareh uscha is tavnis hamishkan ve'is tavnis kol kelav v'chein ta'asu." So we saw the tziv just—he gave us like a preview that later on in the vessels of the Mishkan there are a few vessels which we're going to be told that asher eresi bahar, right? That I showed you on the mountain. So now the idea that Moshe was showed it on the mountain begs that question, which I'm not going to answer now, as to when the instruction for the Mishkan came. If God showed it to Moshe on the mountain, well, when was Moshe on the mountain? So is it the, you know, so is it, at which time Moshe was on the mountain? Moshe was on the mountain a few times.
Yeah.
Moshe was on the mountain 3 times for 40 days. So at which point is God telling him the Mishkan? All right, so just throwing that out there. But in any case, so one of the big ones that, sir, I know Rashi for sure mentions it, others comment on it, that Moshe could not understand what the menorah is supposed to look like. That's what it says. That's why God had to show him on the mountain. So he asks the question, hold on. Moshe didn't get it, but Bezalel did get it, and later people, I mean, you know, not everybody had an art scroll they could open up and say, this is what the menorah looks like, or whatever illustrative book that we have. Now, I know that there are machloksim about it, were the branches, you know, curved? Were they Chabad, you know, were they Lubavitch? Were they straight? You know, make up your mind. Okay. Regardless, the point is, he asks, how is it that Moshe can't make out the Kaftorim and the Prachim, the different components of it? So go to the part where it says Uva Kasuv. You see right before it says Ubatzal Yada. right? Betzal. So it's five lines from the bottom, the middle line. Uba kasu lomar kol sharani moreh uschot tavnis hamishkan. Hainu ha'olamos shein tavnis hamishkan v'tavnis kol keilah l'mafurashim ech heim anasim. What did I show you? I mean, olam means the world, right? But I'm not sure if it means something else. But the whole totality of the Mishkan of what it's supposed to look like. Avalora Moshe eska Mishkan v'chol keilah l'mala zulas hamenorah mizbeach. What God showed him, the totality of the Mizbeach, whatever that means, but the specifics, the only ones which he saw on the mountain were the menorah and the Mizbeach. The menorah k'siv reba asev etav b'sem asher atam areva har, mishum sheniskashim Moshe l'chavim kol prat. So if you recall, we just saw in the previous comment, is that the Mishkan needs to be made precisely. And there's something about the minute details of the menorah, unlike everything else, where if you look at them, you know, the Aron is a flat piece, a flat box. How difficult is it to make a box? You know, what's a zer? A zer is a crown around the Aron. Okay, so is there a precision of that crown that it needs to be, or is it just, you know, whatever the artist decides? It has to be a zer zahav. So what does that mean? Okay, I'll leave that because I don't have the answer to that question. But so now the idea of the olamos, the idea of there being a parallel of some kind between world, if that's in fact what that word means, and the menorah is something which we're going to get into in more detail, actually basically now. Okay? Take a look at the next one. V'chein ta'asu, gama osim ya'asu apu'ula neged ha'tavnis she'en ha'olamos ha'mechuvanim. I wish I knew what he was talking about. These worlds which are intended. And if it's true that Betzal be'emes yada Betzal akol, the hodiya la'osim v'lechas hakadosh lefi anidrash l'chol echad adas. So Betzalel understood, and he was able to give over the assignment of what each person needed to do. Only because Betzalel was given, right? What does it say? Rei karasi b'shem Betzalel. Betzalel was given a gift, right? Similar to the way we understand what God does for Shlomo HaMelech, when God says, you know, what do you want? And he takes, you know, all I want is wisdom. Okay, so I'll give you everything else as well. That he was gifted something, and Betzalel had a deep havana, a deep understanding in the way that others did not. But what Betzalel also had was the ability to transmit instructions and to delegate, even though he was the overseer of everything. Okay, now it's hold on a second. What am I up to? Hiram, who was heavily involved in the building of things for the Mikdash. What happens in the second place of Mikdash? They did not have that deep understanding. Even though they made every vessel properly, the divine presence that was present in the first Beis HaMikdash and at the Mishkan was not there. Because there's an element, you know, remember that Hasidic story where the guy wants to, you know, the non-Jew comes over to this house on Shabbos and he tastes it, everything's delicious. So he asks for his servant to be given the recipe, and then he makes the same thing when it doesn't taste. And they say, "Oh, what's the taste? Why doesn't it taste exactly? You follow the recipe precisely." He says, "Ah, when did you eat it? Wednesday. Were you keeping Shabbos? No. Ah, the flavor you're missing is Shabbos." So there's something about the idea that was given over through Betzalel and maybe through Moshe's Hashras Hashchina. Not Moshe's Hashras Hashchina. It was Hashras Hashchina that Moshe merited. That was transmitted, which only existed in Beis HaMikdash number one, in Mishkan, and of course Beis HaMikdash number one. Okay. What?
It's like it says,
yeah. We call it Hashchina in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Yeah. What's bothering you, Abe?
No, I just heard that the menorah, the reason it was so difficult, because
I
had to be
mixed. Right, no, of course. I'm not, but his question is still a good question. meaning Bezalel gets it, and later people who made these things. So the answer is that it never says regarding Moshe that God gave him the Chachma, the Tevuna, and the Das to understand this stuff. Okay, in other words, Moshe is a giant in Torah, no question about it. Is he a giant in architecture?
Maybe,
I don't know.
After God gave, showed him what it's supposed to look like, he was able to transmit it.
It could be, but I don't know that it even says that Moshe does that. In other words, later on, God says, not in this parsha, I think it's in Kisiso, and God says that I have appointed Bezalel and Vamaleo Soruah Kolkim.
The Kisharon that he gave Bezalel was singular to Bezalel, apparently.
Okay, but you know, when it says here, Reba Seba Tavnisam, Asher Atamar Ebahar, it's not there, God is not saying that you're going to tell it over to Bezalel.
No.
Okay, Bezalel is not
Bezalel. God from Hashem, not from Moshe.
Right, okay, that's the point we're trying to. Okay. All right, I'm actually going to skip the next one. I wanted to do it, but I'm going to skip it. Okay, let's turn on to the next page. And then it's here, so now we're now on page 4. So in the Pasuk, which we have here, Pasuk has Zion, which is the bottom of page 446, we're told, no, sorry. V'nasata el ha'aron es ha'idus asher etein elecha. So it says you're supposed to put into the Aron the edus that I'm going to give to you. You know, what are the edus?
We assume it's the Ten Commandments.
Isn't that a great question? Asher etein, I thought you already gave it to him. Or maybe not. Again, it's another little, I don't want to say it. It's another little ammunition for the discussion as to when this instruction is being given.
Yes, nothing.
Right. This is Asher Etein. So that's why, I mean, if you look in Parshas Kisisa, it says, Vayihi kechalal sol, daber ito b'har Sinai, that when God finished speaking to Moshe b'har Sinai, after the first 40 days, that's when he gave him the Luchos. But it doesn't say the Luchos, it says the Eidus. So Netziv says, Milashon Eid, compares Rashi. What is aid? Mean a witness. V'gam lashon yud, shem echadim es hakadosh baruch hu v'Yisrael kiviyachu. What is yud?
Married. Goal.
What?
Yud is a goal.
It's a goal, right? So when you fly an El Al and it shows you when you're going to be getting to, I think it says ya'ed, yud ayin dal. And what does that mean?
ETA.
Destination, not ETA.
Oh,
destination.
Yeah.
Right? Or time until that destination. So I think it's like, you know, it's the destiny of Am Yisrael is to be connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyach. Well, right. I mean, look, we're talking about the Luchos Ha'edus. Okay, so I think we're actually going to see it soon as well. We're going to get it into a little more. Yeah, I have it later on in the bottom, towards the bottom of the page. Actually, no. He doesn't really talk about it there. He does say ve'ela aron titena sa'idus. There it's titain that you're going to put it there. Okay. Well, maybe I think we're going to get to it in a little while. I hope so. Okay. Let's. So now we have pasuk yitchas. Pasuk yitchas v'asisa shnayim kruim zahav mikshat ta'aseusam mishnei ketzaus hakavoros. So what is shnayim? Shnei mibay means two. So why do you have the word shnayim as opposed to shnei? By the way, you see that word v'hum yutar? The Netziv does this all the time, and it's throughout this parasha. I'm going to show you a couple of examples where he says there's an extra word here or an extra letter. And I'm going to learn something from it because, the phrase "Ein Amikra Vayla," Lamar Darshani, right? The pasuk comes to be learned out for something. He applies that to words or letters which he views as being extra. So he says, "What do you need? You don't even need the word shnayim at all because when you say kruvim, stam kruvim is plural and it means two. Ela shnei sheyu shavin ze kazeh vaday achyavi." So he says, Shnei means that they would be exactly equal. Okay, so that's an interesting question. Shnei luchos ha'idus, right? They're, at least the luach is the same, But the words
are not the same.
Although there is an interpretation, that all the Aseres HaDibros were on each of the Luchos, which is interesting.
All ten were
on each one. So when Mel Brooks says, I've got 15 commandments, and he drops one, oops, 10 commandments, that's not true. Anyway, so b'davar hachadol yishavim, b'lachad ha'yatzur ha'zachar, l'chad ha'yatzur ha'nekeva. Right, the one had a male face, and one had a female face. Ha'anag d'chsiv sh'nayim, d'mash v'zug kruvim, echad zachar v'echad nekeva. So that's what sh'nayim means, l'amdenu. The ahava shebein, I skipped the parenthesis. He's quoting not quoting. He says, after I came up with this, I found a Rabbeinu Chai. That's always nice, by the way. It's like what we call Baruch Shekivanti. I thought of this, and then I saw it somewhere else. Lamdenu, the ahava shebein Yisrael avim shebashmayim, sheyivur b'mikra samach hu ahavas mashpia ba'mushpa. That the love between Israel and their Father in Heaven is the love of the one who is the inspirer and the inspired. Kamo zachar nekeva. Like a male and a female. Sheteva yitzira mechaivam shekach chut ba'abriya. Sheyeh mashpia mishtokek v'ashpia be'aba alamushpa mimenu. That each one in their own way feeds into the other and is a source of inspiration or inspires, etc. Or inspired. V'amushpa einav tlios tamid l'hamashpia. And the one who is inspired is always looking at the one who serves as the inspiration. And that is the way it is with the man and woman. Now note, he doesn't say which one is inspiring. Okay? And that is the desire of God, to always be giving over and to be inspiring, a blessing to with love through to the Bnei Israel. As the Chazal say, Ein tshukaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela al Yisrael, shenemar ba'alai tshukaso, Yisrael aneim tliyos rak HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God desires to be connected to Israel. Israel's eyes are always looking towards God.
It doesn't say anywhere that one is male or female, does it say?
Not in the pasuk.
Not in the pasuk.
No, not. No, I don't think so. I we'd have to look in later. I don't think so. I don't think it's in the pasuk. Okay, so then when it describes the kruvim in the pasuk, it says, "Avayokrim porsek nafayin lamala." So that their wings are pointed upward, covering sochachim, like the word tzchach, right? Ala kaporos ufneihem yishalachiv, they're facing each other, but ela kaporos yupnei akruvim, but their faces are facing downward to the cover, which is the cover of the ark. Sochachim bekanveihem, they're covering the cover with their wings. Lagein ala Torah, the Nitziv says, shalot yishkach. To protect the Torah, that it shouldn't be forgotten. So he says that one of the kruvim represents God, the other one of the kruvim represents Israel. Ish alachiv, they're facing each other. Laros ala ava aza, to show the strong love. Mabit alakala benene b'riyasa, as a groom looks at the bride and just enjoys looking at her. Ela kaporis, of course, it's in an appropriate fashion we're talking about. Ela kaporis landenu, the abatas haKadosh Baruch Hu v'Yisrael yachal haTorah shebaarom. Remember, the idea is, imagine that my hands are much bigger wings that are covering the kaporis, but my face, you know, the bodies are facing each other, but the face is down. Why? Because what's down below the cover of the ark? The Torah, the luchos, the Torah, whatever's in there. And that's where they're looking together. Right? Yisrael, the Torah, and God are all united as one. So that's the message which we have here, and it is a beautiful image, I think, when we think about this. I once heard this in the context of the description of how Kolak Suvim. All of the writings are Kodesh. Rabbi Kiva says, and Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodeshim. Because what's Shir HaShirim? I mean, Rashi famously says that it's a metaphor between the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And when you think about the Kodesh Kodeshim, what's the image of the Kodesh Kodeshim? This image, the ark. There's nothing else in the Kodesh Kodeshim. And what's in the Kodesh Kodeshim? The same union. It's the Kruvim. And then what are they looking at? They're looking at the Torah. So it's a beautiful message about how when we do things right, whether it's male and female in a marriage, in a home, or whether it's God and Israel, we're supposed to be guided by the Torah. And if we're guided by the Torah, we're doing, you know, similar to the way the Mishkan has to be precise, we do the Torah right, then we should be blessed. And we should only be blessed to get it right. To get it right. Okay. Now, Vinasata Sakapores. So the one thing I'm going to point out to you in that you're going to put the kapores on top of the aron. Just look at the last line that the Nitziv has. He says, and we're going to show you more on the chon lahalan chaf beis lamedal b'ritzos Hashem. So we'll explain it there. So we're going to get there momentarily, and we're going to see what the Nitziv has to say about the kapores and how it is placed on the ark. Okay, so remember, this is just we didn't look at the psukim, but these psukim here is still the instruction for how to make the aron, how to make the aron and the kaporis, the cover of the aron. Pasuk HaBeis, okay? The Pasuk HaBeis is in the context of the instruction for, I'm sorry, that's the last pasuk in the instruction for the kaporis and the aron. So it says here, I'm going to meet you there. There's that word again, no'arati. It's like destination, right? Destiny, goal, like Rabbi Kosowski said. And I'll speak to you from on top of the kaporis, from between the two kruvim, asher ala aron ha'edus, which are on top of the ark of the edus, I'm not going to translate now, all that I'm going to command you and instruct you to tell over to the B'nai Israel. L'faneinu k'siv, S. V'lefnei Rashi v'Rabbi Ezra hayakasu b'sefer Torah v'as. So he's pointing out that there is a change of a word, a vav missing. So depending on where you're from, I guess, might have had a slightly different Torah. There's a what's his name? When Dr. Schiffman was here, he pointed out things that, you know, there are a few of those in some of the Dead Sea Scrolls. In different books, I think that there are lists of these kinds of differences which appear in some Koran has put some of them out. I think Rabbi Breuer may have put some of them out because it's in different manuscripts. I don't know so much Torahs because I don't know how many really old Torahs there are. I think the oldest Torah that's around today is maybe 700 years old, but there are. That's what I read once. I don't know the oldest Torah that is
existing still.
That is rollable. Let's put it that way. Is that old, like a full Torah? But anyway, so he says here, l'faneinu k'siv es, l'fanei Rashi v'nezo k'siv sefer Torah v'es. Okay, v'yigad dvar me'el near in yutar. He says, but you see there is that word again. He says the whole thing here is a little extra. Ubalo sifeizu davar, and the vav is coming to teach us something. L'fi anuscha es koyal osama marvidi barti yitcham. So according to the version that does not have a vav, it's saying Eis Kol Asher Tzaveuscha El Bnei Israel. It's referring to what was just spoken, right? The Yibarti Tcham El Kaporis Mibein Shnei Kishu Bashir El Aron Adus Eis Kol Asher Tzaveuscha El Bnei Israel. That I'm going to tell you all that, but if it says Ves, it's going to be different, and all that I'm going to, you know, and something else that I'm going to be telling you. So he's quoting, I guess, himself later in Bamidbar. He says there are two components of the oral Torah. Chada hilcha halachos hamikubalos mekadosh baruch hu. One are the halachos which are given over by God. Chada, and the other one is, I'm sorry, shein is ma'ashehel Moshe be'omlo v'siyata d'shmaya. Things which Moshe discerned through his involvement in Torah and with God's help, the help of heaven. He says that, what am I going to tell you? In other words, even things which you're going to discern through the help of heaven. What's pilpulcha? Through your talking it out, through your, you know, your analysis. Okay, in order to get to the truth of what the Torah is. But according to the viewpoint which is from the Torah that he attributes to Rashi and Ibn Ezra, who davar v'yatzmo, it's referring to a new type of speech that God would tell over to him. And speak to them all that I'm going to instruct. So that's referring to things which are told over at that time. Okay, so what the Netziv is actually doing here, if you think about it, is he's saying that this is one of the proofs in the Torah, and there are a lot of them, by the way, that in addition to there being a Torah Shebachsav, there is a Torah Shebal Peh. There's a written Torah, which of course we have, and there's an oral Torah which was given over to Moshe, which is referenced here in the Chumash. I think that's an important thing to remember. Now we're done with the Aron. The next thing which is told to us is to make the Shulchan. What's a Shulchan? It's the table that's going to have that's going to hold the bread. And in Pasuk Chafei it says V'asisalam is Zer Tovach Saviv. V'asisal Zer Zahav L'miskarto Saviv. So what's this Zer Zahav? L'fiyab Shad Heimah Shnei Zarim. Zarim is two crowns. V'udi Yisaviyoma Dafayim Beis Gimel Zarim Hein Mona Shal Shulchan Echad. I mentioned the Mikomo Kochad Binyanu Shnei Zarim Bolu Rameis Ala Malucha. He says these two crowns that are going to be on the Shulchan are meant to hint to kingship. The one which is on the table itself is a reminder of the physical kingship, which wears a crown. So the other crown, which he's referring to, I don't know where it is. I mean, if you look at the art scroll thing here, for example, you see a tiny crown, okay? And you see even where it says, Zer. But according to this picture, that is on what's called the Misgeret. Because which is the Shulchan? You see how there are two levels in the bottom there? The bottom one is the Shulchan. Top one is, I'm sorry, let me rephrase, I apologize. The bottom one is the misgeret. In other words, I don't know if any of you are familiar with how construction works, but if you want to build a table, not this kind of a table, but if you, not really, because this one just puts legs on it. If you want to build a wooden table, okay, the way you build a wooden table is you build a frame, and then you build a top, which rests on top of it. So the frame is it's additional support. So the misgeret is below. In this picture, you see there's kind of two layers. Where the zer is, that's on the shulchan component, and the lower level there is the misgeret, is the frame that would hold the shulchan. So according to the way the Netziv is describing it, there are two zers, two of these crowns, and the purpose of these two crowns is one is representing malchus, and the other one is representing the wealth of malchus. Because within the frame is the lechem apanim, is the showbread, which brings bracha and parnasa to Eretz Yisrael. So what does that mean? That it's like the wealth of the king. Which king are we talking about? Are we talking about the kingdom of David, or are we talking about the kingdom of God? So I don't know the answer to that question. Okay, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, I wanted to show you this one, Menoras. Pasuk says, V'yasisa Menoras Ahav Tohar, Miksha Teyaseh Menorah, like you mentioned before, that it needs to be done out of one piece. Menoras Rivai Kmo B'Shulchan. Okay. V'yasisa B'Shulchan. Ah, okay, so what do we see here? V'yasisa menoras zahav tahor. If you go back to the Shulchan, it's not over here. I'm trying to remember where it is. Somewhere else it's described in that way. Ela menoras hi muchu beres v'nismeches latahor. Why is it called menoras zahav tahor? Menorah of pure gold. Moshe yikasa menoras tahor, or zahav tahor. It's as if it says, the pure menorah out of pure gold. V'ayinu d'chsiv kol pa menorah ha-tahora v'lo mishum sh'ayisa shel zahav tahor. So when it describes the menorah ha-tahora, this is the point that I wanted to focus on. When it describes the menorah ha-tahora, it's not because it's made out of pure gold. Ella, skip to the middle of the line, ella mishum she'techunasa be'etzem tahora. What is its function? Its function is a tahora function. It's a purity function. Akavana she'ein me'ira karoi ella k'shador tahor b'masav. In other words, it's kind of like a litmus test to how the people are behaving. That is how the menorah works. Mishum hachim b'ayisheni. So remember what we saw about b'ayisheni before. Not as good, right? Not as good as it was in Bayis Rishon. Achar shenizkalkel hador, kava haMenorah. After the people, messed up, the menorah wouldn't light anymore, or its light was not very powerful. That in Parshas Tetzaveh, so maybe we'll see that next week, the strength of the menorah, or the purpose of the menorah, is to show the strength of the study of the people. She have all derech and message should come true. That it should be following a line of true thinking. He says if people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and the menorah is put out, then we come to find two Torahs, as we know. So what's he referring to? Is he referring to during Hanukkah period? When the Hellenists were overtaking and the menorah was basically shut down. The Galus is after the destruction of the Hamikdash. He's saying that while the Bayis Sheni was in existence, the menorah wasn't functioning. So is that during the time of Hanukkah? Is that later on when there was further influence and corruption in the Kohanim Gadola and the Maccabees were the Chashmonaim, the Hasmoneans, were no longer the from guys who did what they were supposed what they needed to do at the time? It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I don't know what he's referring to. Okay, I thought the next one was cute. If you look just a very short one, Te'aseh Mole Yud. So what might he say in a different comment? He might say that Yud is extra, but the point is that it is extra. L'rameiz al beis hamikdash sheyihyu eser menoros k'mo she'asa Shlomo. Right, that the extra yud is coming to show us that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and if you look at Malachim, it describes that there are 10 menorahs in the Mikdash. You have to remember, the Mishkan is a tiny building. And how many people go in there? Just 5 Kohanim, and then soon 2 are going to die. Sorry to spoil the story. Okay, so you're going to have 3 Kohanim for most of the time in the wilderness. So you don't need a whole lot of light, and you don't need a whole lot of menorahs, but the Beis HaMikdash has a lot more going on, so it needs a lot more light in there.
Where were they placed?
It's like a metaphor almost.
I don't know if it's a metaphor. I mean, I've seen artistic renderings of the Beis HaMikdash during that time, they have drawings of 10.
Didn't the menorah have to be in a certain spot?
In the Mishkan. No, in the Beis HaMikdash, different.
Not.
Maybe one side. Whether it's east or on the northern side or the southern side. How do we do it now? When we light the menorah, we light it on the southern side for a reason. So that's probably what it is. It was on the southern side in the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, okay, next one. Kruvim. The Netziv talks about how there are kruvim, images which are woven into the Yerios. The Yerios are the covers of the Mishkan, and Kruvim, which are woven into the Paroches. And so he just makes a distinction between them, how on the Paroches, on the curtain, which stands as the barrier, the Mechitza, between the main room in the Mishkan and the Kodesh HaKadashim, it says, Ma'aseh Choshev Yaseh Osak Kruvim. You have to make it out of Ma'aseh Choshev, it needs to be complete. And in the Yerios, it doesn't say that. Lo Yetzarach Lachshov B'tchilo Sh'tiyo Satsur She'achil V'dato La'asos, He says basically because the Yerios were made up of smaller tapestries which were woven together, he said when they were woven together, then the Kruv was complete. But it wasn't complete based on making the Yerios themselves. So, meaning the separate tapestries. Okay, anyway, that's really all that he says there.
Why do we use the word Kruv like we used in the
Because the kruva means an image. The question is, what's the image? Well, I mean, every artist that puts it, based I'm sure on the research, has animal imagery on there. Not the same type of kruvin that you have on the kaporis. Now, I only give you the next one, Beis, Orach HaYiriyah Achaz, because he says here that there is a difference in the length of an amma on curtains than the length of an amma on vessels, which I had never heard before. And he goes into detail. He says, you know, it's like, the only thing I could imagine is, you ever try to get, let's put it this way. Shoes. Shoes come in sizes, right? So if you wear a size 10, okay, and a woman wears a size 10,
not the same.
Well, that's basically what he's saying. That the amma for a solid item is different than the amma for a curtain. Okay? I mean, he brings proof from other places where that was, you know, where it was the same thing. I mean, one thing that he said here, I mean, he quotes here, Divrei Hayamim, Beis, Gimel Gimel, B'midah HaRishona, and he quotes the Gemara Menachos, and, I'm sorry, did I get that right? Maybe I presented it wrong. No, that's right. In other words, it's the structural amos, which are a different size than the amos of Canaan. Look at the end of the third line. The amos beis hamikdash hayu amos binyan gedolos mishel kelim. Okay? Now, by the way, an amma doesn't have a defined. You know, we know that it's a machlokas how long an amma is. Whenever I mention amos from any kind of pulpit discussion, I'm saying amma is somewhere between 18 inches and 24 inches. How long is an amma? Well, it's like this. And how big is it on me? It's different than on you and on you. And we're all a little different. So our amma is going to be a little different. Because the point is that this is amma, right? It's not... You don't have an amma... And I'm a ruler.
Universal, it's, yeah.
Right, you don't have an I'm a ruler.
But the yard came from originally also. The
okay.
King's reach.
Right, okay. So exactly.
Means
exactly.
King.
Okay, we are now going to look at what I mentioned before about the kaporis. And maybe with this we'll come to a conclusion. Okay, so take a look at the bottom of page 6. And then, oh man, I wrote that all this stuff is important. Okay. Always happens. It's so much to do. Okay. Look at the pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay. So now we're on page. Sorry, Parakavav. We're in Parakavav already. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Okay. So in the instruction for how you're going to put this together, Chavav Lamed. Did I say Chavav? Chavav. Page 458. Okay. So here is describing how you're going to put the parochah itself. And it's an interesting question, by the way, with regard to the order of how you put things up, because remember that you can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what's the definition of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? It's inside, right, on the inner sanctum of the parochas, where the aron is. What if there's no aron there? Is it a Kodesh HaKadoshim? So maybe you can argue that it's not. But technically it is. Can you bring the Aron in behind the parochas? So in some cases you're going to have to, right? If you take the Aron, Vayihi ben Soha Aron, right, when it leads out to war, if the Mishkan is already, put somewhere, then you take it out and you go, okay, so that's a possibility. But what about when you assemble the Aron, the Mishkan, after some travel? How do you do it? Do you build the Mishkan and bring the Aron in? Or do you put the Aron down and build the Mishkan around it? Right? That's a possibility. So take a look at the way it says here in the Pasuk. Nesadas HaKaporas Ala Aron Oidus B'Kodesh HaKodeshim. Sorry, let's read that again. You're going to place the Kaporas on the Ark in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. What? Ever noticed this before? I did. It means you're going to put the ark, the cover on in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Can you imagine putting the ark on in the Kodesh HaKodeshim? How could you do that? Isn't the ark, you know, the kaporis is really never supposed to be removed? Or is it supposed to be removed? I mean, maybe you have to put something in there. I meant the sticks, but I... No. I did not mean the sticks. I meant the kaporis. The badim are never supposed to be removed. The question is regarding the kaporis, is it supposed to be taken off? Maybe to put something in there. But once you put something in there, right, how often are you putting something in there? Not often at all. Not often at all. Take a look. When a satas a kaporis, all are only just because of the Jew. He says when they actually did it, you know what they did? It says they put the kaporis on the ark and then they brought it in. Ramban already talked about it. Remember how we saw before how he attacked the Rashi? Now he's attacking Ramban. Earlier it said you're going to put the kaporis on the ark from on top. Duh! Of course you can put it on from the top. There's no other way the kaporis is going to fit on the ark. Why are the two different psukim describing how the kaporis is supposed to be put on? Okay, skip to the end of the next line. Imkain. This is where the answers begin. So what it should have said is you're going to bring that kaporis inside. And then, once you're inside, you put it on there. It should have said, you're going to put the kaporis in from outside the parochas, you're going to put it onto the aron. He says that Moshe learned from all this that when you're bringing in the ark, you're going to put the kaporis along with it. If this is the ark, and this is the kaporis, instead of it being in position like this, it's going to be like in position like this. Okay, which means that it's not on properly, but it's on top. You ever have like a soup boiling over and you have to kind of take the cover so that the steam can come out and the soup, right? You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. So it has to be a little off, so it goes out on the handle.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of idea, that it's on top, so it's being brought in together, and when you put it down, then you adjust it. That is essentially what the Netziv is describing here. So you put it on ekshu, however, you're going to put the kaporis on the aron on top, somewhere. Not in its correct position. Veloksiv al aron ha'idus, and it doesn't say on the aron ha'idus, it means on the box itself. Avagash v'kari niyach shem ha'idus, even though you've already put the edus, kumash kasat le'el, midachsiv l'kamev, nasat al aron ha'idus, you're going to put into the aron the edus, yikamakal norimik ra'adayin aron ha'idus, ad she'enosim b'kodesh ha'kodeshim. It's not considered the aron ha'idus until it's in its proper place. V'mishamachi ksiv al ha'aron, that's why it only says that the kaporis is going on top of the aron, but not the aron ha'idus. V'lo yivyachad ba'ofen she'ah kashum netzad. And it's not, and it shouldn't be brought in the way that it's supposed to be. Milamala, nafuke shalo yavi esaron, but open shei dafnos defanosav lamala ulamata la pesach menatzad. You should not. In other words, you should bring it in where the opening is facing up. It should not be brought in sideways. Kaporis yeh munach la dofan elyon. Don't bring it in that the kaporis is on a side which is now facing up. Mishum hachi perish hakasuv milamala, and that's why the pasuk says you have to put it on from on top. Sheyegam v'nesina rishon alamala pesach kederach mikaso, that the way it's supposed to go on is the way you don't turn the aron sideways so this is resting more flat and straight and you'll just pick it up and put it on when you put the aron. No, it should just be on a little crooked so that it can be adjusted karoli in the way that it's supposed to be done when it is in the kodesh hakodeshim. Okay, so that is essentially how he describes that, and of course what he's trying to do is bring to for us to a conclusion of sorts of how we can reconcile these different psukim. Okay, now the only thing that I still wanted to do with you is Lamed Hey. Everything else I just noted in my notes that these are all interesting, and the one about the Mizbeach on the bottom page 7 just shows how the Mizbeach was placed in such a way that it faced the four ruchos, the four winds, so that people could actually know which way is north, south, east, west, based on how the Mizbeach was placed. I heard a kind of opposite theory, because I'm not sure. I imagine that it was side, one side faced north and one side faced south, east and west. But when I remember when I was touring parts of Israel when I was in yeshiva, so whenever we'd go to some ancient place that happened to have a synagogue, it was pointed out that each of those, the corners of the synagogue, the corners, not the walls, but the corners, they were always rectangular, but the corner faced exactly north and south and east and west. And there's something about that time period that was very cognizant of that, you know, of the directions that they would do that. The other thing about the Mizbeach is he notes that the Mizbeach was made out of copper and it was filled with earth. Why? Because we have a concept of Mizbeach Adama Ta'aseli, that you have to make a Mizbeach out of Adama, and so it was filled with earth when they were in their position, but when they would move on to the next place, they would just pick it up and all the dirt the dirt would stay out. Okay, the last thing that we have here is Lamed Hey, if anybody wants to go, I'm not insulted, it's already an hour and 5 minutes, but I wanted to do this because this is a good, I'd like to end with a little bit of a relevant message for us, and that's what this last one is. V'ashulchan titein al tzela safon. Okay, that the shulchan is placed, so you were asking about the placement of the items in the Mishkan, so the shulchan was placed in the south, which means that the menorah was placed the shulchan is in the north, and which means that the menorah was in the south, which is what I mentioned before. Okay, v'ashulchan titein al tzela safon. So the Nitziv says Seder Hamikra Tamua. This is a little wondrous or concerning the way the pasuk presents these things in order. Etc. That you're going to place the shulchan outside the parochas, the north. What we're being taught here is what is being hinted in as the purpose of these vessels. The tachlis hashulchan haya l'shnei dvarim. That the purpose of the shulchan was for two things. Echad l'shefa parnasa ubracha batua sa'aretz abal yidei lechem apanim. One is the transmission of parnasa. I mean, shefa is not transmission. Shefa means the overflowing, right, of parnasa and the bracha in the grain, which would come in the land through the representation and the symbol of the lechem apanim, the bread which would go on the shulchan. Beis, alzar melucha v'osha. We already saw that. The crowns, which represent the crowns of kingship, so the answer that was the answer to my question, which is the kingship of man and the wealth of that kingdom. And remember, a wealthy kingdom is a successful kingdom. A poor kingdom is a weak one. Mishum zeh hunach al tzela tzafon, and that's why the shulchan is in the north. Gugrisim v'basra daf chafayim beis harotza sheyachkim. Yadrim, Barotza Shiashir, Yatspin. You want to get smart? Go south. You want to get rich? Go north. Vesimanach Shilchan Batsafon Umenorah Badarom, and that's how you remember it. Because the menorah is light, and Torah is Ora, and Torah is light, and the menorah is light, and so that's where wisdom is in the south, and the Shulchan represents Parnasa and wealth, and that's in the north. Now menorah Tachlisel La'ir Al-Kalkuk Lashat Torah. So we said before that it's lighting the analysis of Torah, which goes out to live. We are old Reish Parshas Tzaveh, etc., and Parshas Emor. Vine Yadua de Parnasa Berevach Muchrach Lagdim Lifnei Pilpula Shel Torah. He says that success in Parnasa has to come before over analysis of Torah. De Beloze, because without success in Parnasa, E Efshar Lios Amelimba. Without people having with no dough. There's no dough, right?
You can't be right.
Masha Einkein. I knew this one would. You'd like it. Okay. Masha Einkein Ashirus Imi Ba B'Schus Torah. Eina Magia El B'Shvil Shekar Zachu Ba'Omel Torah Migiyim Mimena Gam Osher V'Chavav. He says, "Well, if it comes in the merit of Torah, it's because Torah was only able to happen because work was done beforehand." At first, you need to have the bread. The reason why it's in the north is because that's parnasa is harotza shiashir yatzpin. And after you put up the shulchan, then you put up the menorah. Opposite the shulchan. Mashpiyin al amalei Torah, shebayim lasig koach menorah. That the baalei parnasa, those who make a living, those who are halavai should be successful, they're supposed to, what's mashpia?
Influence
and inspire those who study Torah, who are trying to get the strength of the menorah. And then they can merit to the second purpose of the shulchan. That both Parnassa and Melucha should be successful on account of the fact that it goes that the shulchan is going on the menorah. And what's the menorah doing? It's reflecting back the light. So what does that mean? It means that you need to have Melucha and whatever Melucha is representing, and you need to have Parnassa, and that is what the shulchan represents. And you clearly see from his instruction and the way that he's viewing that the shulchan is placed first, that is, I don't want to say more important, but certainly very important before you rely only and solely on the menorah.
What does it mean, go with, young man?